The presenting sponsor of Moon Tower Soccer is FVF Law.
To find out what makes FVF a different kind of injury law firm, you can visit FVF.law.
Hello, friends. Thanks for listening to Moon Tower Soccer. This week, we will cover some Austin FC news, including re-signing of one Hector Jimenez. And we're going to spend a lot of the show answering listener questions. My name is Landon Cottom, and I'm joined, as always, by Mr. Jeremiah Bentley.
Hey, everybody. I'm Jeremiah Bentley. And Landon, I am very happy to have you back from... Is New Zealand still the land down under? Is it only Australia?
Yeah, it's... I think you only say that about Australia, but New Zealand is even more down under than Australia is. So maybe we should change it.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do that. I think there's probably like a tourism bureau or something. I mean, okay.
Let's start movement.
Yeah. Let's do it. I mean, other than not wanting to log into your email from the top of a mountain when Mike and I panicked because we didn't have a Zoom account access, and sending some like great pictures of just like waterfalls and scenic sights. Like what were the highlights of your recent trip?
New Zealand is... it's amazing. I've been fortunate enough to be able to travel quite a bit. And New Zealand is a place that is like amazing that it exists. It's the landscape wise and just like amount of vistas packed into it's kind of a big place, but relatively small country compared to a lot of other countries. It's insane. Just like we drove around a lot and got to see a good chunk of the South Island, and just everywhere we went was just amazing. Like the most boring day we had driving was still, if you'd have just taken that out of that trip, it would have been the most beautiful landscapes I'd seen in years.
That's super cool. Did you learn any more like our archaic history of New Zealand while you were there?
I kind of stopped the learning bit once I was there. I mean, we would see stuff and pick it up. I did learn a lot about birds while I was there. Someone turned us on to this app called Merlin, and you can like tell it, if you see a bird, you can say like, I'm here, it was this size, it was these main colors, and it'll bring up a list and say, these are the birds that fit that description in this geographical area. Does this look like your bird? Does this look like your bird? And so I learned in both countries, there's some really cool birds. And I'm like a huge bird guy. I'd say I'm a medium bird guy. But got to see a lot of cool birds, and that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and the bird app works here too, I assume.
Yeah.
Right, everywhere. And you're not going to, like, there's no Hobbit talk that I can like sort of weave into this conversation at all? Because I feel like some of us, especially Mike and I, were very, very Hobbit friendly.
Let me find this. I made some notes while I was listening to the show. Y'all did a great job, by the way. Mike was a wonderful fill-in, and thanks so much to him. Okay, let's see. My notes were... oh, there was something about, like, did somebody say that you wouldn't imagine I would take a tour, or that I would take a tour?
You do not seem like a tour person. That was what we felt like. No matter, like, Hobbit, non-Hobbit, you just do not seem like a guided tour group kind of guy.
I am in the right circumstances. If it is like a historical thing or a thing where I'm going to learn a lot more about what I'm doing, if I have a tour guide, I will do a tour. But I would say I'm a tour guide guy. I'm not like a travel agent guy. I want to pick my own experiences, but when I get there, I'm okay with having someone else make that experience better. As far as Hobbit stuff goes... it's a very big island, and most of the main Hobbits are a big country. Most of the Hobbit stuff is on the North Island. I was mainly on the South Island. I was in the general vicinity of like a place where they filmed one scene or something. I didn't go there because there's a lot of other cool stuff to do. But I think it was Davey on Los Verdes Slack that was giving me crap for not doing Hobbit stuff. And then I imagine several other people silently in their house, but there's a lot of great stuff to do in New Zealand, and I was on the wrong island to do the best Hobbit stuff. I'm sorry. I will say, on the way home, it was the flight from Auckland to LA. So like probably mostly Americans going back from a vacation in New Zealand, getting up and going to the bathroom, just walking around the flight. Half of that flight was watching Lord of the Rings on the way home.
as they should. All right, I'm on board with that. Yeah, and then you got back, and then we saw each other for a bit on Friday. think it was Friday, right? We had the chance to play in the Austin FC media game. I don't even remember what your team name was, but it won 5-3.
We were Verde FC, I believe, and you were Listos United.
We were Listos United, so I believe that leaves us 1-1 during the two seasons we participated, because whichever team I was on last year ended up winning. Do you have any highlights from it other than I can walk again after 3 days, which I'm very excited about?
No, it was a lot of fun. Last year I was recovering from food poisoning and felt pretty terrible for the whole game. Didn't play very well. And so I felt like I needed to make up for it this year. And I thought I had a decent game this time and had a lot of fun, both playing on the pitch at Q2, which is amazing. Thank you to Austin FC comms team for inviting us to do that. But also just like hanging out with some of the other media folks, seeing some familiar faces, meeting some new ones. So yeah, the whole thing was just a really good experience.
Oh, that reminds me, there's one game thing that I wanted to bring up because I think it like very well summarizes each of our approaches to this match. We were talking afterwards sort of about where we played and how our team lined up. And I said, like, Listos United had no tactical discipline. And I just kind of played wherever the vibes took me, which sometimes was fullback. Was it center forward a little bit? And then what was your answer on where you played in this game?
The first little stretch I was playing in the middle of a line back three defensive line. And then after that, I kind of moved into midfield, and me and Cam Kubek from the comms team were kind of running a little combination play up the left-hand side because y'all were leaving it wide open. So we got some decent chances doing that later on in the game.
Yeah, I like that y'all had some amount of tactic going on, and we were mostly just trying to stay upright.
Adie Silva, we posted a picture of us. We did just like a normal smiling picture, but then we did like a hard picture with us scowling and with our arms crossed back to back. And Adie posted that into Los Verdes Slack and said, "What's the name of this mumble rap duo? Wrong answers only." And some of my favorite responses were, this one's from Dustin. He says, "House of Lower Back Pain," which I thought was excellent. Jay Mendoza says, "Vanilla Twice." And then Stephanie Torres says, "I don't know, but it's my new Apple Watch face background."
And she did post a picture of her Apple Watch face background, so that actually is. And then I was wearing a bandana on my head in that. And so like my coworker Jackie sent me a picture of Steve Carell as Prison Mike from The Office. And basically said we had the same vibe, which I'll have to link out to that. I'll send it to you so you can put it in the show notes. But yeah, it was a really good time. Thanks to the comms team for taking care of us once a year. Every time I get down there, the thing I'm most amazed by is how wide a Major League Soccer field is. Like it felt like
they shortened the pitch for us because we played 9v9, I think it was, but they did not make it less wide. And so I'd see a ball like across, just go through the box and be like, "Oh, that's going to go out." And then somebody just like walk over to the static ball and ring next to the sideline.
Yeah. And I feel like there were a limited number of people who could like get a corner into the box from the actual corner.
Yeah. I think that is the most underrated, difficult thing in soccer for people who don't play, but watch to like play in a long cross or like a goal kick or to hit a corner into the box period, but like into the far side of the box or anything like that. Like it's really hard to hit a ball far and accurate.
Absolutely. Well, let's get on to maybe there's a bit of news that came out while you were out. I thought we'd give you a chance to relive that. And we're going to get probably deeper into maybe all three of these topics when we do the listener questions, because they all came up during Patreon. I think the one that makes the most sense here is sort of your thoughts on the players who released. We got that list like two shows ago, but we haven't really had you weigh in on it very much, other than I think talking about Alex Rings. Like, what's your take on who came and who went?
Yeah, I mean, I agreed with pretty much everything you and Mike said on the show. I thought there were a couple of guys on this list that might get re-signed. I think, without looking again, primarily like maybe Adam Lundqvist, maybe Memo Rodriguez, but I'm not surprised that none of them did, if that makes sense. Like I feel like this was the more likely scenario, is like all of these guys getting not getting renewed. I was relieved to see Danny Pereira and Damian Loss had their options exercised. We kind of assumed that would happen anyway, but it's always reassuring to see it on paper. I was relieved to see Rodney Redis's name on there, because we'll get into Ring here in a second, but knowing what I knew about Alex Ring's contract, I was afraid that maybe Rodney had a 4-year guaranteed contract or some weird thing. Like if he scored a goal, his fourth year got triggered or something like that. So relieved to see that he is being released. Kip Keller, I was a bit surprised to see him on there, but it was mainly because I misunderstood the rules. I was under the impression that Generation Adidas players had a guaranteed 3-year contract. And I think that was true at one point, but is no longer true. I went back and looked at some of the rules, and I think as of 2020, I found some articles and some documentation that said something about like the player is guaranteed a salary by MLS for 3 years or something to that effect. And what it says now is that until the end of the guaranteed term of his contract, up to 3 years, Generation Adidas players are on a club supplemental roster. And so that up to 3 years is the only thing I can find about a link. So it seems like what Kip's was two guaranteed option, which I just misunderstood the rules and didn't know that would happen. So I didn't know that could happen. So I was surprised to see Kip on there, but I was very interested to see how they framed Alex Ring's option being picked up.
Yes. Yeah, so I have that in front of me, if you want me to read it exactly, and then you can provide any extra commentary or thoughts on that. So it's Alex Ring's contract option for 2024 was automatically exercised due to the player meeting certain benchmarks.
Yeah, what I was going to be looking for is, did they just include him in a list of all players whose options were exercised, or did they give a disclaimer saying,
we had
this
to do
was,
it.
This was not our decision. We had to do this. And they did plan B there. When I don't know that they necessarily had to. Like, don't you think they could have just said Alex Ring's option was exercised?
Oh, they didn't have to phrase it the way they phrased it. No, absolutely. They could have just said that. So what do you read into that? And do you want to know or speculate anymore on like what those triggers were?
Yeah, I mean, I see this as Claudio Reyna taking care of one of his guys from the New York days. I believe he brought Alex Ring in at NYCFC. He brought him in Austin, and apparently before he left, gave him a pretty sweet contract that is the reason why he's here now. As far as the triggers, like I have no idea. It could be something as simple as like breaking a minute's threshold or something like that, which I'm sure he would have broken that easily because he played a lot this year. As far as Alex Ring as a player, I'm not upset that he's coming back. I'm really not. I think he's a useful player still. He's getting up there in years now, but still had some really good minutes for Austin this year, and I think can do again next year. My problem lies with, we've talked about this a lot, how much money he's making, but even more so that like the current administration had no say in this happening and had no chance to renegotiate. Is the guys on the team, he's getting paid this much. Rodolfo Borrell has no say in this matter.
Yeah, that one's kind of tough. I think we talked about the rumor that there, which seems to be have a lot of weight, that there's like a fourth DP coming in 2024, which makes this Ring's money not quite as important. And like, I do love his flexibility, but do you think that there's a decent chance that, because he's not like a Borrell guy, that he gets shipped off somewhere and Austin takes something for him?
I mean,
I'm
sure that they'll be exploring those options, whether or not there are options available. I know Phil West said in his article about this that he could see him maybe going back to the Bundesliga. I don't know if Alex Ring can play in the Bundesliga anymore. Like, which Bundesliga team wants him at this point? Maybe he could make a roster, and I don't know that he'd be a starter there. And he'd probably need to play in the top tier of the German league to make similar money. And so, yeah, I'm sure they'll be exploring the options, but I think it's not going to be super easy to just move him. It's possible, and I don't think entirely unlikely, but it's not just going to be an easy thing to do.
Yeah, and it's for that reason also, like, it's moving him within the league is probably also quite unlikely for the same reasons. Like,
I think even less likely, moving within the league. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess the other two pieces of news we got, Mike and I speculated last week on MLS free agents, which I think, do you want to save this for like the Patreon questions since that came up? Or
yeah, we're going to spend a lot of the, probably most of the show on Patreon questions, and there's one about free agents. So yeah, let's save it for that. There's also a question about the new jerseys. I know y'all talked a little bit about jersey rumors. I have heard a few things through the grapevine of people who talk to people who have seen it. And what I'm hearing sounds a lot like what I heard about the Sentimiento kit before it came out, which is like, some people think it's boring, some people really like it, some people really hate it. This all makes me think I'm probably really going to like it.
Well, and since last week, of the people who've seen people who know people who have seen something, it's trending more positively, I feel like, than it was 1 week ago. We heard this. We've heard more people who seem to think it's good than bad. So we can speculate on it. I think we're going to maybe pick our own designs, which we'll see how that goes. But we could do that down the road, which leads us to the one actual piece of news, and that is Hector Jimenez. Man, I almost pronounced it like Kevin did, which makes Adiase mad just out of like habit. But
I did it. I appreciated in the release from Austin FC, they put the pronunciation in there. And this is a pet peeve of mine, and British soccer commentators and pundits and talking heads are the worst at this, is pronouncing any Spanish word really. But it's been very popularized to pronounce this last name Jimenez, and that is entirely incorrect. There's no situation where that is correct. The accent is on the second syllable, and I understand, anglicize it if you need to, but get the accent right at least. And I'm glad that Austin FC really put that front and center right there.
yeah, they did. So he's re-signed. He's under contract. Obviously they never release salary details, but we do see that he's still on the supplemental roster. So I would imagine he's going to make the veteran minimum, just like he did last year. So Austin now over 3 years. So he's one of eight, I think, now original players left on the roster. Has made 41 appearances over 3 years with 1 goal and 5 assists.
Yeah, what's your take on this, Jeremiah?
I'm on the he's a good dude in the locker room guy, and you're probably going to not get a lot more production for your the person sitting in spot 24 on the supplemental roster. So I'm not super excited by it, but I definitely buy the. I'd rather hang on to him as a known and know that in case of emergency he can probably turn in some okay minutes. And he's got a lot of influence with the club, with the players.
Yeah, I think the argument against this, and what I've seen people say, is why the guy played, I think, 2 MLS matches, 5 appearances in all competitions, and I think fewer than 200 minutes in all competitions last season. So if it's a guy you don't want to use, why keep him around? Why not go and find someone else who you think might be useful? Even if it's a flyer, take the flyer on him. I totally get that. But I think it's important to frame what supplemental spots are generally used for. There are some teams who use more of them than others, but on any MLS team, there's going to be at least half of the supplemental spots, if not more, that get 0 minutes in an MLS game. If you look at Austin FC's last year, the supplemental roster spots were Kip Keller, Brandon Craig, Hector Jimenez, Daniel Pereira, AOC, Damian Loss, Charlie Asensio, Sophie Jafal, CJ Fodre, Owen Wolf. Of those guys, 1, 2, 3, 4. 4 of them got minutes. CJ got some minutes there at the end of the season. So 5 of them got any minutes at all. Maybe 3 of them got substantial minutes. And so to give one of those spots where you're not going to expect a lot of minutes anyway to a guy who is locker room leadership, is a guy who everyone on the team likes and respects, and everyone in the league probably likes and respects, and are going to like this guy, bilingual, able to kind of bring in Spanish speakers and English speakers and relate to all these guys and kind of help them adapt to a new place, to have a coach on the field, to have a guy in a year where there's going to be a lot of turnover, a lot of new players, to have a guy who can do all of those things, plus help them learn the system and integrate into the team. I think that's really valuable. And I totally get people saying that they would rather have someone who might actually play. I think for this spot, for the money it's on, for the likelihood of the alternative choice in that spot actually making a difference on the team, I think re-signing Hector Jimenez is a pretty good idea.
Yeah, I mean, I get the other side. I don't have a lot of like strong feelings about this either way. It's one more roster spot that's filled with like sort of somebody you know and can count on.
I will say if the rest of the supplementary roster spots, once those are filled out, if it's all guys that we don't think can play,
that's a then problem.
Maybe this looks worse. I'll give you that. But if there are a handful of guys who are just decent prospects, maybe one or two who are just kind of depth and minute eater type players, I think this is a win.
Right. We did get, it's not Austin FC news, but it's Q2 Stadium news today. That is that Q2 will be a host venue for the Copa America 2024 on June 30th and July 2nd. This is the CONMEBOL tournament, but also includes teams from CONCACAF.
Yeah. So this is really big news, right? Like this is one of the biggest soccer tournaments in the world. Like it legitimately is. This is a top, I don't know, what do you want to say? Behind the World Cup, behind Champions League, UEFA Champions League. But it's probably in the top five soccer tournaments in the world, arguably.
Yeah, after those, and then like the Euro, I don't know. I mean, there's no other confederation tournament that's even close.
Yeah, and so to have that in Austin, it's group stage. I think Q2 is too small to ever host anything past that in a tournament this big. But to get that even, that's really, really cool. And I think it's a testament to what soccer culture in Austin has become, to know that these confederations are happy to come here and host games here. So as far as who we're going to see, it's going to be definitely, so they have the number one seeds in each group filled out already. So we know which groups it will be from of these hosts. So who we will not see is Argentina, Mexico, the United States, Brazil, Uruguay, Colombia, Ecuador. Who we might see, it's definitely going to be from Brazil or Mexico's group. That draw happens on Thursday of this week. And so we could potentially see Chile, Panama, Venezuela, Paraguay, Jamaica, Bolivia. And then there's two playoff games that I think are happening in March. Yeah, March 23rd. And that's Canada versus Trinidad and Tobago and Costa Rica versus Honduras. And so two of those, I don't know, six or eight teams that I just listed off are going to be playing at Q2. And so as far as like what we can expect, the quality of game or like the crowd, I think it really is going to depend on which teams we get, right?
Yeah, there's definitely some favorites that in this group that will draw a lot of fans, possibly have Austin FC players participating, depending upon how the playoff matches work out. But I think there'll be a lot of excitement. One of the things in the press release, which I'm sure is included intentionally for context, is there are only three soccer specific stadiums, which are going to be the smaller stadiums included as host. And Q2 is one of them.
Yeah. Super cool. I you're saying Austin FC players, how cool would it be for Austin FC fans to have a Venezuela versus Costa Rica match at Q2 featuring Danny Pereira and Julio Cascante?
It would be amazing. That would definitely be an in-demand ticket for sure. So let's hope that happens. Let's hope Costa Rica takes out Honduras in their qualifying match, and then that gives us the best chance of maybe getting one of them. But yeah, what an epic matchup that would be to have those two guys playing against each other.
All right, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back with some listener questions. When no one is around. Moon Tower Soccer is brought to you by our friends at FEF Law, the official injury lawyers of Austin FC.
FEF is a different kind of personal injury law firm dedicated to community, transparency, and client education. And I did see recently online that they just celebrated their 9th anniversary as a firm or birthday. It's like, happy birthday, FEF Law. Way to go.
Happy birthday. You can go to FEF.law to find out what makes FEF a different kind of injury law firm and why understanding your legal options can dramatically change the outcome of a case. Once again, that's FEF.law. Amplify Credit Union is a member-owned financial cooperative that served the needs of Central Texans for over 5 decades. Amplify's team lives and works in the community, making them experts on how members can achieve their financial goals.
What makes Amplify different? No bank fees. Amplify is the first financial institution in Texas to put an end to bank fees. In 2022, Americans paid almost $8 billion in overdraft fees alone. Millennials pay an average of $336 a year in bank fees, which works out to 6 Austin FC game tickets per person per year. You'll pay none of those bank fees with Amplify Credit Union.
Amplify membership is open to any Texas resident. Learn to trust your bank again at Amplify Credit Union. To learn more, go to www.goamplify.com/moontower.
Our premier sponsor, McGuire Woods Consulting, helps for-profit and nonprofit companies navigate the political process at the Texas Capitol and also at the national level and the city level. I would assume multiple city levels through lobbying. Oh yeah, definitely, because the second half of the ad talks about all the cities that they're in. So use them for lobbying, communication strategies, or general advocacy.
With offices across the country, as Jeremiah mentioned, in 10 MLS cities, including Austin, Houston, and Dallas, McGuire Woods Consulting is solidly Verde and Black. Learn more about our friends at McGuire Woods Consulting at mwcllc.com.
So do you think like the different branch, like the Austin, Houston, Dallas cities, see if there's like a Copetejas? There should be some kind of like Copetejas competition among those. Or like, yeah. Some amount of trash talk.
Let's get it at Kate and see if we, if there's not, maybe we can like help implement something.
Absolutely. Let's create some animosity.
All right, we are back. We're going to jump into some listener questions from our Patreon. We have quite a few. I think we should have time to get through all of them. If not, we can push them to next week. But let's jump right in and start with one from Alex Mod. He says, which is your lesser evil in the MLS Cup? Who you're picking, Jeremiah? Well, your boyhood club?
Yeah, this is really easy for me. So I don't. Do you want to talk about the playoffs? You probably didn't see a ton of the playoffs, like in general. So yeah, LAFC, obviously. Like LAFC was, once Austin got knocked out, was my pick in the Western Conference. I broke out my shoulder-to-shoulder scarf and posted it in Los Verdes Slack and got a lot of boos even before they played Houston. So I was definitely happy to see LAFC beat Houston. And hopefully most people were. Like, I feel like there's enough animosity with the Dynamo that fans would feel that way. But how about you in the LAFC versus Columbus matchup?
I was really torn on the LAFC Houston matchup. I am a forever underdog guy. Like, I will always, given two neutral teams, I will always choose the not favorited team, which was Houston in this scenario. But I'm like, I can't really cheer for Houston, can I? And so I was struggling with this one. So I was hoping just for a fun, exciting match, which we didn't really get. Unlike the other one, the Ohio game was amazing. Like, that was so much fun. And so I think as far as this goes, like, I think that there are going to be a lot of Austin FC fans kind of conflicted by this one because of the, I guess, like, conflict between certain online subsets of fans between Austin and Columbus. And then online and real life conflict between Austin and LAFC teams and fans over the last year or two. I get all that. But I will say, I think this was the most exciting matchup that we could have gotten given these final four teams. Columbus is a team who likes to have the ball, attacks with a lot of numbers, push people forward. They are audacious in the way that they attack, both with the numbers they push forward and just like really ambitious balls played in, crazy little combinations that they try in the final third. And like, they're encouraged to do crazy stuff. And on top of that, they have some really talented attacking players who are able to pull that stuff off every once in a while. So they're a lot of fun. They almost always score goals. They almost always have a lot of the ball. LAFC is a team who likes to score on the counterattack. And so I think just those two styles going up against each other is going to be really interesting to watch. I honestly don't care who wins. I just want to see, I hope it's 4-3 or 4-4 and goes the extra time or whatever. Like, I just want to see a really exciting game. And if I get that, I don't care who wins in the end.
Yeah, I mean, that would be like last year, right? Last year's game was a great game. Yeah. And then LFC ended up winning it. And I think it's the most you can hope for out of that. Let's go to the next question. Because we talked about this a little bit with Mike, and this is a Phil West question. Of all MLS free agents possibilities recently announced, who's the one player you think Austin FC should go after and the one you think they will go after?
Yeah, I listened to y'all's show talking about this. I really liked Mike's Griffin Dorsey shout. A cheap and like serviceable starting fullback. And if he's like a depth piece or like a rotational fullback, then that's amazing. I will say, like, I think there's a number for him. Like, if he's like, I'm sure Houston will offer him another contract. And if he's entertaining offers from various places, you could easily get into a bidding war. And I think there's a number that you get to where it stops being a good idea to go after him, if that makes sense. And I think that's going to be the case for a lot of free agents. But if Griffin Dorsey just wants to leave Houston and we're not going to, like, the price doesn't get too inflated, I think that would be a great option to go after. Zach from the North End, I saw him mention online, AB Sissoko from Seattle. He's 24-year-old, currently on 85,000, and he would be a re-entry player, so he's not eligible for free agency. So there's could potentially be some competition there, and then maybe he's snapped up before we even get to our spot in the re-entry draft. But I think he would be a decent shout as far as like a fourth center back that has experience in the league, has been a decent player in the league already, and could get him for pretty cheap. Like when you're taking like that versus Romagna on 450K, like I'll take this any day of the week. Phil West has been making a case in a recent article for Danny Musovski. Do you have any thoughts on Danny Musovski?
Well, Danny Musovski was one of the guys that was on my list. And I guess now that I actually read Phil's question, which is of the players recently announced, what's one player you think Austin FC should go after? Because like my guy on that show that Austin FC should go after is not announced. So I'm going to change my answer to Danny Musovski of the guys who have been announced so far to definitely be on the market. He's fine. He scores a few goals. He's not 30. He didn't make a lot of money last year. You know, he's a productive piece that's probably relatively affordable.
The reason why
disappointing.
He's on like 100K. He was trying to re-sign at RSL and like sat out of training for a while, and I think maybe even missed some games during contract negotiations. That ended up going nowhere. He came back into the team after, but I imagine he's ready to just go. And he didn't have a great year, so maybe I think he was looking for a decent contract because he came out of those years at LAFC and was a decent player for them. Maybe his stock has dropped a little bit now. If we can get Musovski for cheap still, if he's not looking for a big contract, and I don't think he could be after this season really, but if we can get him for relatively cheap, and if Austin FC is eyeing someone else as a potential starter, I would be totally happy with Danny Musovski. If Danny Musovski could be fighting for the second spot or like just rotating in every once in a while, I'll be great with that. But I'll be very disappointed if we go into it and our striker core is Jussi Zardes, Danny Musovski, and some 19-year-old supplemental spot player.
Yeah, and you don't want Ben Sweat again available on the roster. You don't want the return of Ben Sweat to see if he can realize his promise from the first one game Austin FC career?
Let's bring them all back. Ben Sweat is available. Mackenzie Gaines is available. I'm sure we could pry Manny Perez away from Louisville City if he still plays for them.
Brady Scott's probably free if he's not working at a Home Depot.
No, I think he's on the crew still.
Oh, is he? Okay, well, never mind. I'm sorry. Sorry. I apologize, Brady Scott.
But yeah, I really don't mind Musovski's game. He's a hardworking striker, can pull wide and kind of be a connector and kind of play more as a winger if needed. So I don't mind that. But if he's being looked at as the answer, like, that scares me.
You want to go to ATX Bird Camp Lover 6969-420. If you were going about a normal day, how many owls would you need to see before you started to think something suspicious was afoot?
How many owls you got?
Well, I mean, I live in constant fear of the Duolingo owl. So actually, I have two different answers. One, we used to have these two barn owls that lived in a tree around the corner. And if I saw those two owls, I would be like, oh, it's a normal day. But they flew away maybe 18 months ago. So I think the first owl I see would terrify me at this point.
I've already stated on this show that I'm a medium bird guy. I say the more owls, the better. We used to have some great horned owls on our street, and those are the big guys. And then we had some little screech owls that would bathe in our bird bath at night sometimes. When I was in Australia, for a couple of days before going to New Zealand. When we were there, we saw the bird with what I think is the best name I've ever heard for a bird. It is the powerful owl. And it's a giant, like, enormous owl.
Lives up to the name?
Yeah, it was like we found a bird man, just like a guy who knows about birds and just wanders around this park and talks to people about birds. And he was telling us that this was a juvenile one, so it was like not even full grown, and it was enormous. And so, I reject the premise of the question. I say the more owls, the better.
But there's an upper limit, Landon. I'm going to challenge you on this. Like, if you saw 100 owls,
if we get into like Hitchcock territory. 100, yeah, okay. I'll give you that. I'd say, yeah, let's say 10 owls is the max
before something's going on. Elise, rate the importance of potential trophies for next year. I guess
Which ones are we even going to be in? So Champions League is out the window, right?
Yep.
So it's going to be Supporter Shield, MLS Cup, US Open Cup, and have they said anything about Leagues Cup this year?
I don't know if they have. Copa Tejas, you're forgetting.
Ah, Copa Tejas.
The shtick answer, which we should probably take out of the actual evaluation set here. Yeah, I was wondering about that.
I forgot the most important trophy in North America. And then Leagues, I don't think they've said anything about Leagues Cup, have they? Maybe they have and I missed it, but I'll assume Leagues Cup is happening again.
Surely they would not do that just one year.
Some version of it will happen, I assume.
Absolutely.
Maybe not exactly the same, but what's your number one?
My number one is still MLS Cup.
Absolutely. I think I put Supporter Shield and MLS Cup on pretty equal footing. Like, either of those would make me extremely happy.
Yeah, and I want to, like, as a fan of like world soccer, say that the Supporter Shield is the most important, because that would be the trophy that you would win if you're the best team in the league in most of the rest of the world, and especially like as somebody who's most of my experience in Premier League. But we're in America, and the team that hosts the trophy at the end of the playoffs is usually the team that most people refer to as the champion. So I'm going to go with the MLS Cup for that reason.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I will say, if you won the Supporter Shield, it is the best sign that you got to see a lot of wins and a lot of good soccer throughout the season, as opposed to losing one game at the end of the season. So that's kind of my argument there. So let's just say those are one and two in whatever order you choose. What's number three?
US Open Cup.
Yeah, I think I'll follow that one. And then where are you placing Copa Tejas and Leagues Cup or whatever else happens?
I'd say Copa Tejas is four above whatever weird contrived thing that the league and Liga MX come up with.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, it would be very cool to win Leagues Cup, but there's a lot of asterisks in there, right? Like, I'm guessing the Mexican teams are not going to get any home games again. It's going to be out of their like kind of season sync, and so they're not going to be in form, probably. And so I think there's a lot of caveats to that one. It would be cool, but I think there's always going to be an argument against why it's important from the haters. Copa Tejas is undeniable.
Absolutely. Undeniable.
Especially, maybe it'll be more undeniable if the rules make any sense in the future. But
yeah, it's going to be a weird year this year. I don't know that people are going to be clamoring to take photos with the Copa Tejas trophy after the way Austin won it last year, but I mean, I'll still take one. It'll be fine.
All right. We have another question from Elise. If you had to, this is like a non-soccer question, it looks like. If you had to remove someone from history with the expressed intent to change history as much as possible, for better or for worse, who'd you remove? I'll be honest. I kind of missed this one in show prep and didn't really prepare an answer, but I believe you did, Jeremiah.
I did catch this one, and I did some research, mostly on like who are the worst people in the history of the world, thinking that like that change would be better. And then the other way you can maybe think about it is sort of like what the most extreme event was. So, for example, you could say like the guy that started World War One. I don't remember his name right now. The guy that the assassinated friend like Ferdinand, but I feel like that was going to happen anyhow. You go with Judas, but I feel like that was going to happen anyhow, regardless. And then I did look at like really bad guys like Hitler, Stalin, obviously clear. It's like this guy, Leopold, who was the Emperor of Belgium, who apparently just like screwed up all of Africa, which is why it's all set. Like I guess he decided Belgium was like too small, and so he took over the Congo and killed like 3 million people and like screwed up the whole half that continent for forever. That was a contender, but I think it has to be, because this is for better or worse, like Genghis Khan. One, because Genghis Khan was a bad dude. He conquered most of the world. He was really, really bad to his enemies. Reshaped that region. And also, there are 11 million men in the world today who can trace their DNA to Genghis Khan, because he was so prolific in mating during that time. So if you think about like who in world history like had the greatest overall effect, either way, who knows? Like there may be a lot of doctors and scientists that like are progeny of Genghis Khan that did a lot of amazing things. And there's probably some serial killers. And just by like raw numbers, I feel like they had
law of large numbers
that had the greatest effect. And it was a long time ago too, right? So there's like it's like 1,000 years ago. So it's like 1,000 years of history that have been shaped by Genghis Khan. And so like he's definitely my answer.
All right.
Oh, Nicole here. Since you didn't do any research, you don't have any immediate reaction to that one.
I don't. She said for better or for worse. Do we take that as meaning like as a thought exercise to think about what good person we could remove to make the most difference?
So I just took any person to change history overall, like good or bad, which is where I went with, but. Yeah, I mean, I would hate to think about like what good person did a lot of good things. That's a possibility. What good person did a lot of good stuff, and if you remove them from history, it would make history a lot worse.
I would say who discovered penicillin?
Oh, Jonas Salk.
Yeah, that might be a good shout. I don't know.
You want to get back to soccer questions?
Yeah, I'm better at those.
Okay. And I'll ask you this one: Nicole Blair, how would you compare Austin FC in Houston Dynamo Western Conference final performances? So Houston recently lost LA. Austin lost LA last year. Houston's was 2-0. I think Austin's was 3-0. LA's second goal came in the second half. I feel like Houston was more competitive, although it never really seemed like they were that competitive.
Yeah, I feel like Houston's was less embarrassing than ours was. I have some stats pulled up here. It looks like possession in our game ended 51-49. And this is a slightly different LAFC team, where they ended with 30% possession, but 18 total shots and 2 expected goals, where Houston had 70% possession, less than half of an expected goal and 10 total shots. And so I feel like in the Houston game, they just got beat by a really good team. Whereas when we played LAFC, we laid an egg against an already really good team who probably would have beat us anyway, even if we did play well. And so, yeah, I think Houston did themselves more service than what Austin did.
Yep. I don't disagree with that. Here's another Nicole Blair question that I think is pretty interesting. Will Austin FC add a U22 player during the break? And if so, what position do you think they will play? Like where are you at on Austin and the U22s?
If rules don't change, I hope they don't sign another U22 player. we've gone over this, but I think it's worth clarifying again, just because it's complicated and confusing. If we can keep Musajide, our three U22 players this last year were Musajide, Rodney Redes, and Jean Kolmanich. Rodney Redes is gone. Kolmanich is here. If we can keep Musajide out on loan, that leaves us with one U22 initiative player. That would then allow us to buy down Alex Ring and sign another full designated player, a Driussi level, a Zlatan level, a whoever you, Messi level, whoever you want. We can spend as much as we want. There's no
Rigoni level.
It's Rigoni level. Exactly. It doesn't have to be a max TAM guy like what we have in Alex Ring right now as that third designated player. The U22 thing is what drives that. So if we sign another U22 player, Alex Ring is that spot and we can't really do anything to change it. And so I'm hoping we don't sign another U22 player and we go after another full DP.
Yeah,
whether it be this offseason or next summer.
Right, or in the summer, which is probably more likely, kind of given what we know. Well, let's go to one more Nicole Blair question, and then we'll take a second ad break, and then we will go to the rest of the questions that we have. This one, I think Mike and I touched on a little bit. The roster's a bit thin at some positions. That's a bit of an understatement. What positions do you expect Austin will spend the most money on versus economize? And we talked about fullback and striker being the positions of the most need, where you could see the most money spent. Like, I think fullback is the one that's the most dire now, which is weird to say given the fact that Jesse Sardes is the only striker on the roster. But what's your take on where Austin could or should spend?
Yeah, I would like to see them kind of go with the status quo in what most MLS teams do and spend the bulk of the money in the attack and try to economize in the midfield and defense. That is kind of just like what most teams do anyway, but we've all, like, as far as the percentage of salary cap that each position is taking, I feel like the back line, we're kind of like at about as much as you would want to spend there anyway. And so if we can get some cheaper guys, I think this is where like the free agency makes sense, where you're not paying transfer fees, you're bringing guys in for free on club friendly contracts. And then that leaves more space to bring in some spots in the attack. That's kind of how I would want to see them approach it. Do you have anything different from that?
No, I guess where would you, one of the things we talked about is like the need on the wing and whether Austin spends a lot there or just kind of rolls with what we have available. Do you have a strong opinion on that?
Yeah, well, so the next question is from Long Cow, and he asks, if a fourth DP spot for next season actually lands, which position or role would you want to use it for? I would want to see that DP spot, whether it's Alex Ring's spot and we do the buy down for that third one, or if another one is added, I would want that DP spot to either be used as like the starting number nine or a goal dangerous or like really heavy creating winger that is like a nailed on starter. I think those are where we could see the most the most increase in output from the team we have this year. I think Driussi needs someone creating for him. We had Diego doing that last season. We did not have that, whether he was here or not, this season. I think just having another creative force where Driussi is not having to kind of lean away from his strengths and try to be that creator, and he can be more on the finishing end of stuff and having someone who is doing that creating for him.
Which this reminds me of a discussion we had years ago going into the 2021 season, where you would look up and down the roster and you're like, well, there's some talent here, but like, where are the goals going to come from? And I feel like Austin is definitely sort of back in a back to the future way, in the same position where there's just like not a lot of goal creation that you can see out of the existing roster.
Yeah. And I think you could get that out of a number nine as well. If you look at someone like Cucho Hernandez, which he plays a lot like over onto the wing, but often ends up as part of like a front two leading that line for the Crew. He is a finisher, but he is also a creator and will drop in deep and be part of the link up. So if it's a number nine kind of in that role, I think it could be the same, because we have a guy like Driussi who can play up on that front line and kind of rotate in and out of those positions. It doesn't necessarily need to be a winger, but it just needs to be someone who can help create something to help facilitate stuff for Drew Seymour.
Yeah. And the second part of his question is, do we go for in the winter or the summer transfer window? I think I just kind of answered that. Like, I feel like it's going to be in the summer.
Yeah. I'd say whenever they're available. And if that means waiting for the summer, then so be it. But I know a lot of people will probably be impatient and frustrated if we wait for the summer, but I don't want to sign somebody just, I feel like we've done a lot of that in the history of Austin FC, and especially in the last year, just signing someone now because they're there and because there's a need, and not being patient and doing the smarter thing for the long-term health of the club. And we've gotten ourselves into a bad situation because of that. So I'm fine with being a bit more patient if it means bringing in the right guy.
All right, well, let's go ahead and take another break, and then we can answer the rest of the questions that we have. Moon Tower Soccer is brought to you by Covert Ford. The Coverts have been meeting the needs of local car buyers for 114 years because of their service, financial expertise, and support after the sale.
In addition to supporting car buyers, Covert's an important part of the soccer community and the official automotive partner of Austin FC.
We've talked about the Mach-E's, and they're pretty great. And we want to talk to you again this week about a 2023 Mach-E on a 36-month lease for 10,500 miles a year at $499 a month with $39.24 down plus your first payment. This is stock number 223-2485. You see the website for details on the deal.
What's it going to take for us to get you into this Mach-E today?
Get us into this Mach-E. Yeah, it's a beautiful car, and we want to talk about something else.
If you're in the market for a Mach-E or some other kind of newer used vehicle, be sure to check out covert4.com.
Moon Tower Soccer is brought to you by Sage Wilson Realty. The Sage Wilson Realty team is made up of Austin experts who are client-focused and have over 30 years of combined real estate experience.
If you or someone you know are in need of Sage real estate advice in Austin, talk to our friends at Sage Wilson Realty. Be sure to check them out online at sagewilson.com. All right, we are back with a question from Elliot Wynn. Elliot asks, if the front office and Adidas gave this dynamic duo the opportunity to design a third kit, what would it look like? You have to design it together. Talk us through colors and designs. So I, Jeremiah, have shared a link in the show notes of all current Premier League kits. And I thought it would be fun to kind of go through these, mainly because I've struggled. I feel like we've said like what our preferences are, but I think this would be fun to kind of have some visual references and go through and say like, okay, I like this, I don't like this, and this, maybe have some ideas as to why we don't like certain things and what direction we want to see the club go in. So I'll drop this this link in the show notes, so listeners, you can follow along at home and look at this same webpage we're going through here. But I don't know how, should we go through, we can't go through every team, right?
We can't, yeah, let's not go through all of them. So let's just, I haven't actually, like, I'm opening the link now to be like, to see it for the first time. So
I was going through this earlier and trying to just think, like, narrow down, like, what is it that I like and don't like about certain kits? And I think what I settled on is I like straight lines and or like geometric shapes, or like repeating patterns, or like mirror image patterns. What I don't like is curvy lines, or like, I don't like gradients. I know if, let's see, if you go down to the Burnley page, do you see the yellow kit there? That's their like third kit.
Yes.
So they have a vertical sash that goes like off to one side, like down across where the badge is. And they've got like this airbrush stippling effect on there. I hate that. Really don't like, I want that to be, I like a sash, but I want it to be a clean line. Right above that, the Brighton like fourth goalkeeper kit that's got like kind of a gradient and like these different shades of orange throughout it. Hate that. Contrasting that, the other Brighton kits, all like the home and away kits, the blue and white stripes and the green and black stripes, love all of these.
So what I like,
I think knowing that, you could probably go through the rest of these and pick out the ones that I like and don't like. Yeah.
Yeah, I like it to be, I don't really like a lot of pattern, like obvious pattern. I like it to be more subtle and more of a single color. So this is sort of like copping out since it's the number one rated kit on here. But like this Manchester United home that's like red, but also has some like patterns going in the background that are like not too over the top. I like that a lot. And knowing that like this is going to be our more simple kit too, right? We're not going to get like stripe patterns or anything about that on it. I think you have to kind of throw those out. You know, what Mike and I talked about last week a little bit is like, how do you feel about collars? Do you have a preference there?
I don't mind a collar. Just, if they're going to go...
How about necks in general? Like a round neck, you like this sort of like the two little like this Manchester United third, but they kind of meet in the middle. Or do you like a collar?
I kind of like the little like V-neck thing or like the overlapping one. I'm less keen on a rounded neck on most shirts, period. I don't mind like a bigger collar, but I think it needs to almost have like that more retro look to it or like a very simple look for the collar to seem like it fits with it. But I'm fine with the collar if it fits the rest of the design. So this question is actually... It says for a third kit. And so I feel like that one, we could kind of get wild with it, right? Let's see. If we're talking second kits, hear me out here. Let's look at Fulham for a second. So I really like Fulham's, both their badge and their kits in general, because they usually are quite simple. But imagine this Fulham kit where it's like mostly white. You've got kind of the darker color over the shoulders and sleeve. Let's imagine it's that. So white, black sleeves. And then those, like the accents on the shoulders are the bright verde. And then you've got the bright verde badge on the middle. Would you go with that for an away kit?
For an away kit? No. That's
too
I mean,
boring for you?
It's or? Fine. It's fine. I still... But I don't love the color that like that jersey style like shoulder being like a whole separate color from the main.
Okay. Are you in general. So do you like so I generally really like West Ham's just kind of standard kit, or like Aston Villa I think usually has kind of a similar scheme to it. Do you like those?
Oh, where it's
either?
Just the sleeves. Oh, I could dig it where it's just on the sleeves. I don't like
so you don't like when it goes over the shoulders as
yeah.
well. Okay.
Yeah.
But so if we're talking like kind of a wild third kit, go down to close to the bottom, West Ham. If you look at the second goalkeeper kit, if we did like a solid, like mostly solid one color all the way down with like that middle, like the color of the middle section of that West Ham goalkeeper kit, I would be down with like that shade of green, just like a solid kit all the way down.
Oh, I like that one. Yeah. With the, and then the darker on the like arms like that?
No? I'm mostly using this as like a color reference. Just as like, it's not quite the bright verde, but close enough that you could get away with it as like an alternate color. And if it's the third kit, you could get away with wearing it instead of a dark or a light, depending on what the other team is wearing.
Gotcha. And then I guess just among the like the pattern kits, again, this is really highly rated, but like the Manchester City third too, with like kind of the lightning bolt things on it, if it was gonna be a third kit.
I do not like that. Don't like the lightning bolts. I would go so the Manchester City goalkeeper kits with those like sharper, it's kind of lightning but like geometric kind of zigzag razzle dazzle looking thing. I would wear those as a kit, but the like the lightning bolt ones, I really hate that one.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll never settle this. And we'll probably never get a third kit either. So like we'll never have to know.
Surely eventually we'll get one.
Well, sooner or later, but I would say no time soon.
All right. I know we didn't really answer that question, but I think we have to move on.
Yeah. Well, I guess the answer to that question is there's not a jersey that we could design together with color and kit designs that would make us both happy. We ended up like every decision in corporate America by committee, we would end up with the most boring possible third kit, because it was the only thing we could agree on.
This is how MLS Adidas kits get designed.
Exactly. Now you've heard it in real time. Tom Halleck, is Austin FC waiting for you to go on vacation to release roster decisions? The moon toweriest thing ever to happen.
It is very on brand for this whole arrangement, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I was trying to think of something else that would even compare to that. I mean, us doing a special episode for Roddy Redis and then turning out to be Roddy Redis is like, as far as the long game goes. So that's like the only out of schedule show we've ever done, I think. Is that right?
It's one of a handful.
Yeah. I was like, if you don't count the interview we did with the mayor, but that was sort of like an in the moment that we just released in the feed for fun. But
yeah, I would say the mock expansion draft that me and Chris Haig and Chris Wellhausen did the first season as well. That's a pretty Moon Tower-y moment as far as like big nerdy projects that amounted to nothing and we were wrong anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And just generally, I think like the first time we talked about Tam and Gam really like sort of set a brand for what we're going to do. But yeah, I would say moments. Yeah. You going on vacation and huge news coming out is the closest moment. I like this Sean Collins one too. I don't know what this is. LAFC had a ton of flares in their Western Conference final match, which the league posted and celebrated on Twitter and then a day later removed. Do you think MLS will sanction them for doing that? Or will this be permitted from behavior from now on because one of the Garber favorites did it? How do you feel about flares in the stands? And like, how do you feel about the LAFC?
I don't have like a strong opinion on flares in general. I think they do look super cool at the beginning of a match. I know a lot of the folks involved with running the supporters groups here in Austin and kind of planning and organizing all of the stuff that they do on game day. I know they are all extremely annoyed about this because they've been told by Austin FC officials that it is MLS policy that if you get caught with a flare in an MLS stadium, you will get a stadium ban. You will not be allowed to come back into the game. Yet LAFC has flares at every one of their home games and then had almost an entire section of flares. And this is not smoke. This is flares emitting flames that you would use in like an emergency situation on a boat or something. And so I understand why they don't want them in there, but I also think it sucks that LAFC has them at every one of their games and seemingly nothing has ever happened to them. And then the league will post pictures of it online and say, look how great LAFC is, while also saying, if we see you in the stadium in Austin, we're going to kick you out.
Yeah. I don't remember if you were, you didn't go to Denver the first year, right? But I mean, we got in trouble for just having smoke on the grounds, not even like inside the stadium. We were like, pop smoke to like when the team bus rolled in and like got in trouble for that. So yeah, I mean, I think it's, and I saw some people from LA being like, oh, people hate and are afraid of flares was one of the tweets. I'm like, no, I think you're reading the reactions wrong. Everybody's like, all the hardcore like supporters were super jealous of that. So,
and yeah, I was told
it's
annoying,
it's inconsistent.
By someone involved with like game day stuff in Austin, is one of the differences in LA and Austin is that the LAFC supporter section goes right up to the field. And so in Austin, you'll notice there's a gap, like a small gap. And there's a lot of people kind of moving to and fro in that little area in between, including Austin FC employees and kind of like the supporters liaisons. And so I imagine that is part of like, I'm sure nobody's letting the LAFC fans in with the flares. I'm sure they're sneaking them in. But whenever they go up and there's like all this smoke and everything, it's hard to say like, oh, it's that guy. But in Austin, because of the way the stadium is lined up, if you do a flare, there's an Austin FC employee who probably knows your name or at least knows someone who knows your name or could like point you out of a crowd and actually implement that stadium ban. And so, yeah, like I said, I don't care that much about flares, but I do find this imbalance annoying.
We have two questions about Sebastian Driussi and his captaincy. One from Andrew Urban: what should Driussi do in his second year of his captaincy? I personally would like to see more visibility in the post-game press, but can you say what you'd like to see more of differently from his first year? And what do you think he did well in his first year?
Yeah, so Elliot Wynn had a follow-up to this and said, more importantly, do we think Seba will be our captain next year? If not, then who and why? I want to start there.
I think it's a more interesting question.
Do you think that they would take it away from him? I think like I could see them maybe wanting to. We'll get into like whether or not Drewsy is a good captain or not in the first part of the question. But regardless, do you think they would take the PR hit and like strip it from him after making such a big deal of giving it to him?
I don't think they would. And part of this is that point, like making the big deal out of it. Part of it is I don't know who else on the team you would give it to other than giving it back to Alex Ring, which would seem like super weird.
Yeah.
And the third thing is like, I don't really know how common it is like in Major League Soccer for captains to change, you know, on a year to year basis, or if usually like once you're the captain, you're the captain until you're off the team. Like, I don't know that, but I would imagine typically like you're going to be the captain from year to year to year, unless something happens to force them to strip it away.
Yeah. So back to Andrew's question, what should Drewsy do in his second year of captaincy? He says, I would like to see more visibility in post-game press. I agree with that. As far as like what he did good, what he did bad, I was of the mind, like, I don't mind a captain that's not as vocal if they're someone who leads by example, who is at least a leader in the locker room, if not yelling at people on the field. I want them to be a leader in training, a leader in the locker room. For all we know, Drewsy was doing that. Like, that's the part that we don't see and we don't know. We know he works hard. We know that it seems like people generally like him and that he's liked and respected on the team. But I think it's the optics are much better if you're a team who's winning and your captain doesn't talk a lot and doesn't do a lot of media, as opposed to a team that's losing and your captain doesn't talk and doesn't do media. I feel like in that situation, you should be expected to talk more and kind of be the one to kind of shoulder some of that pressure and take it off of your teammates. And Drewsy didn't do that this year.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's where you're really like, that's where you show leadership and that's where you have time to shine, is when it's difficult. And I think in Austin, and maybe it'll be easier now with Burrell, like, you know, we've done a couple Burrell events and there's a lot of, you know, if it's comfortable with the language, like there's a lot of questions in Spanish. And a lot of questions in Spanish don't get translated. So, you know, I think that any like sort of language barrier shouldn't be a barrier to Drewsy like being comfortable answering questions, because he should be able to come in and, you know, answer them in whatever language he's most comfortable with and then like have the English questions translated.
Yeah. And I get that he seems like kind of a shy person. He doesn't really like doing it, but I think that's part of it. And yeah, like you said, do it in Spanish. That's fine. It's not going to bother anybody. But being seen, taking some of that pressure off your teammates, and it's part of being a leader. And again, if we go undefeated next year and he doesn't want to do media, I think there's far less scrutiny on it.
Nobody's going to care. You're right. Yeah. So how about this? What do you think he did well? And I guess maybe we just don't know the answer. Is there anything that you feel like he does? I mean, he does the work, right? He does the work on the field for sure. He doesn't give up. I feel like that's the thing you can say he did well as a captain. And I don't know beyond that, like what was good or bad.
Yeah. I mean, I know, like, as far as what we saw in 2022, I would say it seems like the work part was not a question. I've put out the theory that him and Fagundes got their big contracts and kind of rested on their laurels over the offseason, then came back and had bad seasons. So maybe that did fall off a little bit this year. If it did, then yeah, that's not very captain-like of him. But hopefully it didn't, and he is still working hard, because if you're the guy who gets to wear that armband and you're not one of the guys working the hardest in training and kind of being a guy to pick people up, to have a hand on a shoulder, to be a boot in the butt whenever it's needed, like, that's what's expected of a captain. And again, I don't care if we see that on the field all the time, but it needs to be happening in training. It needs to be happening in the locker room.
All right. And thus we reach the end of the questions from Patreon. Is there anything else you want to talk about before we close it out?
Hopefully we'll get some more news in the near future. I guess today is December 4th.
Yeah, next week is, so this, we will may have to see about this, because like next week we'll be recording on the 11th for release on the 12th. But I believe
the 11th is when the trade window officially opens. So
yep.
We and could I'm, potentially have confirmation, official league confirmation of the Nick Lima trade on that day, along with maybe some other moves.
Yep. And I think the 13th is when free agency opens. So we may or may not have news to talk about next week, but definitely like the news cycle is back on, and the finding things to talk about through the offseason part of this show are probably over. And so, you know, we should be able to pick up some steam from here and hopefully know a little bit more about what Austin's going to look like in 20.
All right. Well, we'd like to remind you to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Come find us on Twitter at LVAHero87 and JBentley_ATX, and then at Moon Tower Soccer on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Sign up for the Patreon and support Phil West on his Substack at verdealday.substack.com/moontower. And I think that's all. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with hopefully some more Austin FC news, and if not, some other Austin FC content. Until then, I'm Landon Cottom.
I'm Jeremiah Bentley.
We'll catch you next time.
When no one is around.
Thing for nothings, you never.
La gente.
Oh my God.